hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the great things ought to be. Tonight, I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight inside of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Love this song I'm singing, be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fight inside of me. Yeah, walking on the fight. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warning. And you run it down my country, man. You walking on right beside me.
Yes, if you're walking running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and, of course, all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, lots more news and views for you. What do we have here? I'm just trying to work my way through some of this material here. Well, of course, interesting little case involving white nationalist or alt-right leader Richard Spencer, and that case is going to be heard by a federal judge in Michigan, and it involves refusal of the University of Michigan to allow a student group to book a hall to sponsor a talk by Richard Spencer. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how the court rules. A federal judge will decide whether to force Michigan State University to allow campus space to be rented to white nationalist Richard Spencer so he can deliver a speech later this month. An 11-page lawsuit filed Sunday night in U.S. District Court in Western Michigan contends that the East Lansing School's refusal to rent a conference room or lecture hall to a Spencer supporter on security grounds violates free speech and other constitutional rights. The legal action against the 50,000 student university was taken on behalf of Georgia State University student Cameron Padgett, the one who tried to rent the space for Spencer. and asks for a preliminary injunction forcing MSU to reverse its decision, as well as $75,000 in damages. And more power to them. I hope this lawsuit succeeds, and I hope they really put the fire to the rear end of Michigan State. You see, the security is the last refuge of the con man and the coward. Security concerns, okay. Well, now, where would the concerns come from? Does that mean Richard Spencer and his followers are going to burst out onto campus and beat students and professors holus bolus? Well, no, probably not. Okay, well, where's the security concerns coming from? Well, almost certainly the radical left. Well, let's see. What could be done about that? What might a possibility be? Perhaps a stern warning that any acts of violence by university students will result in expulsion. That might be a start, and to show the university serious. And that acts of violence by outsiders will be appropriately prosecuted. In other words, if you want to shut this event down by violence or threats of violence, be forewarned that you will face consequences. Now, that would strike me as the reasonable way to proceed. And then the campus police should set up some sort of a perimeter. And if they feel that this is beyond, that the dangers might be beyond their ability to handle, well then, come on, let's think hard. This could be a tough one. No, it's not tough at all. What you do is you call in the city police and work with them. I'm not sure there's even been a threat of disruption, but let's assume there will be. The mere threat that somebody may object to Mr. Spencer speaking shouldn't be enough to, oh, better cancel that event, this is too much for us. No. This is exactly what is meant by the heckler's veto. So if you allow some leather-long person, well, in this case, not even a heckler, presumably these are people threatening violence, although that's not what the story says. Or perhaps it's just utter cowardice on the part of the university. And it likely is that as well. And that's why it's so very necessary for people to speak up for freedom of speech. You know, the people you might traditionally have felt would support it and guarantee it are no longer often prepared to do so. Okay, well, another victory of sorts, this incident illustrates the huge divide between you might call the nationalist forces in the United States and the cultural Marxists, and it really is a divide. And much of the teaching profession, not all of course, but much of the teaching profession has been captured by the cultural Marxists. And they often feel no compunction about doing everything they can to suppress any sign of support for nationalism, or in this case, Donald Trump. Student booted from class for Trump t-shirts. Or I should say, that's plural. Students were booted from classes in a Georgia high school for wearing Trump t-shirts. Woodstock, Georgia. A Georgia school district has apologized after one of its teachers asked two high school students wearing Make America Great Again t-shirts to leave her classroom. The incident took place at River Ridge High School on August the 31st. American schools begin a week or two earlier than Canadian schools, which
which generally go back, well, today, right after Labor Day. And it apologized when a teacher, quote, erroneously told two students their shirts with campaign slogans were not permitted in class. Cherokee County School District spokesman Barbara P. Jacoby said, quote, her, that is the teacher's actions, were wrong, as the Make America Great Again shirts worn by the students are not a violation of our school district dress code, Jacoby said. Quote, the teacher additionally and inappropriately shared her personal opinions about the campaign slogan during class. Shortly after the incident, someone started a change.org petition calling for the teacher in question to resign. But it's perhaps not all that uncommon for students to be punished expressing a political opinion. Well, the other big story today, of course, involves DACA, what's sometimes called DACA, and that's the that's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. So childhood arrivals, these are the children of illegals. And this is a really key issue, and it's good to see Donald Trump throwing it back into the hands of the Congress, because it is a matter of legislation. The great usurper Obama usurped the power of the legislature and issued an executive order that essentially granted short-term amnesty to almost a million children of illegals. Now, there is an argument. Well, they're only the children of illegals. It's not their fault. Well, it's not necessarily a matter of their fault, but should they be allowed to benefit from the illegality perpetrated by their parents? You know, I think this is a perfectly good question. Anyway. All the chattering heads on CNN today were in high dudgeon over this. President Donald Trump's plan to end an Obama-era program preventing the deportation of immigrants illegally brought to the United States as children, putting in limbo about 1 million people who can consider themselves Americans. Now, of course, the usual suspects, Lindsey Graham, he agreed Obama's executive order was overreach. What Trump has done is basically refused to renew the program because it expires. Nancy Pelosi, House Minority Leader, described the move to end DACA, and that's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, as a cruel act of political cowardice. How is it an act of political cowardice? It is an example of extreme nerve that people who entered the country illegally, no, that doesn't mean they personally made that decision, but they are benefiting from the illegal acts of their parents. I don't see this being as much different than children whose parents were bank robbers suddenly losing their allowance because it had been funded through crime. There's going to be quite some real horse trading as it comes down to this will be now thrown into the hands of the legislature and the Congress, and they're going to have to try to reach an agreement. One would be to reach no agreement at all, and most of these, 800,000 or so people will have to leave the country. Can there be something else worked out? Should there be something else worked out? Should people benefit from crime? These are tough questions, and questions that the legislators are going to have to answer. And best of all, they're going to have to answer to their constituents, whatever they decide. One possibility that's kicked around is that many of these would be allowed to stay on some degree of sufferance. However, this would be in return for much reduced immigration numbers. And I think the argument has to be, look, their presence here basically was a form of unauthorized immigration. That's going to have to come off the numbers that are going to be legally allowed into the country. Because part of the problem, quite apart from the argument about legal or illegal, is the fact that almost all of these people are third worlders, helping to perpetuate or to continue the replacement of the European founding settler people of the United States. Immigration intake is a huge, huge problem. Anyway, Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said, Congress must move immediately to protect these courageous, patriotic dreamers. That's the acronym given to these people who arrived as children illegally through their parents. There's nothing heroic about these people. These people have benefited from the crimes committed by their parents. Nothing wonderful about that at all, and certainly nothing heroic or courageous. Patriotic? No sign they're patriotic at all. House of Republicans must join Democrats to pass legislation to safeguard our young dreamers from the senseless cruelty of deportation and shield families from separation and heartbreak. Yeah, but they're illegal. And the lack of respect for law is one of the things that encourages more to come. Because they say, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, wait, yeah, that's what the law says, but nobody takes it seriously. Well, yes, if nobody takes it seriously, why should illegals? There'll be lots of members of Congress falling all over themselves to create an amnesty program, but they will include only token enforcement measures without cuts in legal immigration, warned Jessica Vaughn, director of the policy studies at the Center for Immigration Studies, a group that has pushed to reduce both legal and illegal immigration to the United States. The president should veto anything like that. Yes, anything that would allow some of these people to stay without really boosting enforcement and reducing the numbers should be a complete non-starter. Whether it will be, I guess that's what we're going to have to see. But I think a very valid warning. Of course, as usual, employers are complaining. The last thing they ever want to do is train Americans. Ending the program would cost employers $6.3 billion to dismiss roughly 720,000 workers and retrain their replacements, according to a report by David Byer of the Cato Institute. More than 350 chief executives of major companies signed a letter to the president last week urging him to preserve DACA protections. So, as so often happens, business, they don't care. They don't care about American workers. They don't care about population changes. All they want is cheap labor. Well, okay, there might be some disruption, even if the president ended the program completely and these people had to go back. There might be some disruption. Well, that could be written off as a business expense. And furthermore, it would result in the training of Americans to do these jobs. Oh my gosh, you mean at long last Americans might actually be able to benefit? Oh, couldn't do that. Well, today, September 5th, getting a bit ahead of myself here, September the 5th is an important day for those of us in Canada who are proud patriots. And
Anyway, and it was sent. Let me just. Get this here. Anyway, this is Red Ensign Day. And James Alcock sent me an interesting email today. And he's James, of course, is an expert on flags and has a number of times spoken to our group in Toronto, the Alternative Forum, on the Red Ensign. And if you'd like to hear his talk about the importance and significance of this beautiful symbol, this flag, the flag of the traditional Canada, just email me at paul@paulfromm.com. That's P-A-U-L at P-A-U-L-F-R-O-M-M.com, and I'd be glad to send it to you, a tape of his speech, an audio tape, and I'll tell you how to send the money and all those good things. This is what James sent to me today. Happy Canadian Red Ensign Day. On this day, September 5th in 1945, the Governor General of Canada passed an order in council officially authorizing the use of the Canadian Red Ensign along with the Union Jack as the national flag to be flown inside and outside Canada. This day legitimized the Red Ensign for official use as Canada's flag. This is the flag of the real Canada, and it's a beautiful flag. Just laden with great symbolism. Up in the top left-hand corner is the Union Jack of Great Britain. Very important because it signifies something that the new religion of multicult would like to deny, that we are European. In fact, to a very considerable extent, we're British. Our laws, our political system, the parliamentary system of representation came from Britain. It within the Union Jack, of course, is the Christian cross. Very important. Of course, the multiculties don't like this, but we're a Christian nation. And Christianity has played a very important role in Canada. For instance, the fact that we have a social welfare system. We don't allow people to starve to death and perish on the roadside. That's just not in the cards in Canada. And, you know, some people would call that socialism, but I think a lot of people would see this as simply the implementation into legislation of the Christian's responsibility to some extent of being their brother's keeper. I don't want to get polemical about this, but like it or not, this has been an important part of our country. Well, that's symbolized in the flag. And then there's the crest. And the crest contains the symbols of England, Ireland, and Scotland, and France. Very important. Very, very important indeed. And as a symbol. It's extremely potent, I think. Again, emphasizing that we are essentially European. The original founding whites, with perhaps a tip of the helmet to the Vikings, were English and French. I mean, that is the real history of Canada. And then, most intriguingly and most movingly, in my opinion, below that, there are three maple leaves joined together on a single stem. Now, the maple leaf is an important Canadian symbol. The maple leaf, joined together, green,
Very important, because green stands for life. This is a flag filled with hope for the future. The three joined together have several interpretations. One is that these are the one leaf stands for the native people, another for the original founding Europeans, basically the French and the English, and the third for those who came later or those other Europeans who came later. There are other interpretations as well. The background of the flag, of the behind the crest, is red, a color of blood and passion, and it's an exciting flag and one just filled with meaning, as opposed to the flag we have today that basically looks like an insurance company logo, or as red has always been the colors of the Liberal Party of Canada. Many have said that Canada's current flag is really just a symbol for those who consider themselves as basically the traditional governing party, namely the Liberals. I put this out, happy Red Ensign Day, and have had a number of nice responses. It looks far better than that abominable red maple leaf. A red maple leaf is, as we know, a dead maple leaf. Maybe that does better represent the current Canada, a dead and dying nation, writes Jay to me. And I gotta agree, Jay, absolutely, absolutely true. And James Alcock writes to me and sends a picture. I was wearing my red ensign badge today to mark the occasion. People liked it. And it's amazing how many people like that. And I must say, of the various things I've done politically, one that has given me a huge amount of pleasure is the fact that so many of the young people joining the movement, young white nationalists who've been educated almost entirely over the internet, have adopted the red ensign as their symbol at the various demonstrations, the Proud Boy demonstration in Halifax, the demonstration here in Toronto at Queen's Park on the, let's say that 15th of July, which supported the Proud Boys, who were in the Royal Canadian Navy. They're young sailors who on their own time, not wearing uniforms, had a little protest at the Lord Cornwallis statue on Dominion Day, July the 1st, to counter a protest being held there by the Mi'kmaqs. So these are Indians, and the Mi'kmaqs wanted the statue of Lord Cornwallis taken down because Lord Cornwallis had made war against the Mi'kmaqs, who'd made war against the whites. Not an unusual thing, but anyway, in these politically correct times, natives can do no wrong. Whatever they want must be respectfully, quietly, with great reverence, honored. Well, the Proud Boys were very respectful in the sense they didn't shout or scream. All they did was parade with the red ensign flag and were singing, "My gosh, God save the Queen." That elicited some curses and some fucks and so on from the Indians, and they were told to fuck off, you're on native land. And one of the Proud Boys correctly pointed out, no, you're in Canada, not native land anymore. Anyway, that was it. Well, all hell broke loose because the natives went on the warpath, so to speak, and got all in a huff, and needless to say, that swinish, gutless head of the Canadian, chief commander of the Canadian Armed Forces, who would later, just I guess 2 weeks ago, march in the Ottawa Gay Pride Parade. Now, he didn't have any problem with that, but anyway, Lance Vance, his name is, well, he denounced the Proud Boys and their future in the military was under a great cloud. So did the admiral in charge of the Atlantic Fleet. So So did our turbans. Yeah, a hard guy with a turban. Sikh. Minister of National Defense. And he's a guy who has a big problem hanging on to the truth in matters. He was wildly exaggerating his role in the Afghan war when I don't think he realized he was on candid camera. Anyway, I'll denounce these fellows. I know I'm digressing a little bit from the Red Ensign. Well, anyway, on the 15th of July, there was a supporter protest in Toronto, and by a number of different groups, including the Canadian Association for Free Expression. The chief organizers were the Student Society to Support Free Speech, that's at the University of Toronto. Anyway, I was very encouraged at how, at that event, there were six or seven Red Ensigns and only one Canadian flag. Yeah, with the exception of the Canadian Association for Free Expression, all these people, I would say, were probably under 30. So it really is extremely encouraging how this is not a generational thing. A lot of people might think, oh, well, it's just the old fogies who think back to the Red Ensign. No, it's not. In fact, a lot of young people see this as like Canada's Confederate or rebel flag, the flag that represents the real Canada, the Canada of, to be quite frank, white Canadians. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you in just a couple of minutes with more news and views for our people, and of course those are the European founding settler people of Canada and the United States. Let's see what we're going to have tonight on our short musical interlude. Well, why don't we have Dwight Yoakam, guitars, Cadillacs, and, well, you know, hillbilly music. Guitars, Cadillacs, and hillbilly.
Girl, you got me in a curb real bad, crying myself to sleep. Tell me how this can shatter dreams. So sweet. Now his guitar's getting like hillbilly music. Lonely, lonely streets I call home. Yeah, my guitar's getting like hillbilly music. Lonely thing that keeps me hanging on.
Guitars can last, hillbilly music.
That's Dwight Yoakam, and that's guitars, Cadillacs, and hillbilly music. Well, that's a great song, but I think you already heard that. And next song on our musical interlude is a very interesting one, also by Dwight Yoakam, and Turn It On. Turn It Up, Turn Me Loose, Dwight Yoakam. Dwight Yoakam and Turn It On, Turn It Up, Turn Me Loose. Great song by Dwight, and I'm going to finish this musical interlude with a song by lost it here. My gosh, it is actually disappeared. Okay,
we'll do this one instead. And this is one I'm sure you'll recognize. This is by Emmylou Harris, a very talented woman with a great voice. And this is called Tulsa Queen.
On piano over here is Miss Amy Hard. Rhythm, guitar, and vocals, Rodney Crowell. Bass and vocals, Emery Gordy. Drums, John Ware. Pedal steel guitar, Hank DeVito. Vocals and lead guitar, Mr. Albert Lee.
Cause
And that's Emmy Lou Harris and Tulsa Queen, and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, read the paper on the weekend. Oh my gosh, here's another group that's moaning and groaning. It's not too happy. Persecuted in Chechnya, gay refugees face new struggles in Canada. Oh, boo-hoo-hoo. Organizations helping traumatized gay Chechen refugees adapt to their new life in Canada are appealing to Ottawa and fellow Canadians for help. Didn't you know? Give us money! We need more money! They're struggling, said Helen Kennedy, executive director of LGBT advocacy. Well, let's see my thing. That's lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender advocacy group called AGAL. She said that of the 16 Toronto-based refugees her organization is assisting. AGAL operates a crisis counseling service it is adapting to the needs of those most recent arrivals. So we're adapting to them. I get it. Okay. Here's a belligerent question. Why should we have to adapt to them? Should we have brought to Canada people who are supposedly traumatized? Will they make the best possible adjustment to Canada? You know, different language, all those problematic things. Well, let's read on. The trauma those folks have endured, the amount of violence. We hear a lot of awful things, but this is off the charts, Kennedy said. Earlier this year, the Chechen government launched a pogrom against gay men in the former Russian Republic, where dislike of homosexuals is deeply entrenched. The men were taken to detention centers where they were beaten and subjected to electric shock treatment in an effort to force them to incriminate other homosexuals. On release, they were outed to family members, and they were encouraged to take matters into their own hands. Well, homosexuals are not very popular in Chechnya. Sad as that is, how does that make that a Canadian issue? Why should we have to take them? Well, of course, that's not explained to us, is it? One more thing we do as Canadians. And yes, I suppose being beaten in a detention camp can have been much fun for these homosexuals. But to put that forth as, but this is terrible. Nobody else is, the level of suffering is just incredible. I think it's laying it on a mite thick. I'll tell you why. Others have suffered. What about the German women who were mass raped, in some cases raped to death by the Soviet troops in 1945? I'm simply making the comparison that others have suffered, and that if these people are that traumatized, are these good people to bring in as refugees? Not to be too unkind, but are they not in a way damaged goods? And should it be our job to undamage them, or as the spokesman for AGAL says, well, they're adapting. We're trying to adapt to them. Well, what about another way? What about they adapt to us? Well, there's a unique thought, isn't it? They adapt to us. So anyway, there's much moaning and groaning about them. Well, what else do we have here? The Liberals are meeting this week in Kelowna, British Columbia, and they're going to be looking at their agenda. They're halfway through their term. Actually, it's 5 years, but it's generally considered four. So they're halfway through, and many people feel they haven't achieved very much.
And there are several issues that are haunting them. One of them, the members of Parliament have been hearing from constituents, is the big unhappiness about the illegals crossing the Quebec border. And basically the government's doing nothing. Well, actually worse than doing nothing. They're facilitating them. The RCMP, they're the police, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, they're glorified baggage carriers for these often well-dressed, well-heeled illegals. Many of them with pockets full of cash, or in some cases, suitcases full of kiddie porn. Oh yeah, we're getting the best. Also, unhappiness with the Canadian Armed Forces. They're building tents to house the illegals instead of, what about building a fence? Oh, I mean, it doesn't have to be a wall, but a fence to secure the border. There is, of course, also unhappiness about the big grant of $10.5 million to a terrorist, Omar Khadr. What was supposed to be a secret settlement, as with most secrets, it leaked out, and there are a lot of people who are quite unhappy about that. There is wholesale stupidity in the education system. The latest fad is to do away with awards ceremonies. The Globe and Mail featured a number of principals. There's one at Strathcona Elementary School in Chilliwack, British Columbia. Principal Jonathan Ferris eliminated the concept of traditional award ceremonies in the spring because he felt that everyone needed the opportunity to shine. Well, everybody does have the opportunity to shine. But life, in many cases, is competition. You might be a gifted neighborhood hockey player, but you may not make it into the NHL. There's competition. You may be good, but others may be better. That's life. And that's a good lesson. Yes, everybody should have the opportunity to shine. Absolutely. So, everybody can shine if there's no awards. I see. I think what you get instead is really just dull stupidity. Maddie DeMuccio, president of the Toronto-based advocacy group Society for Quality Education, said that high-achieving students are not necessarily given as much attention from their teachers and are oftentimes asked to hold back their enthusiasm for learning so others can catch up. Awards keep them focused and motivated to learn. Students who earn good marks work hard to do so. They should be rewarded for that, says Ms. DeMuccio, and of course she's quite right. But that's not the current insane egalitarian thinking. Alfie Cohn, K-O-H-N, I don't think his family came from County Tipperary, if you know what I mean. He's an educating and parenting author. Said that awards undermine the quality of learning in a classroom when the point becomes to get high grades and defeat other students, not develop an interest in a topic. Well, that's not the way it works at all. It's not just about winning an award. That may be a pleasant pat on the head at the end of the day. But perceptive people can see that winners, too, ultimately lose from competition, Mr. Cohn, the author of Punished by Rewards, said. They come to see themselves as worthy only to the extent they've defeated others. They come to see everyone else as obstacles to their own success, which destroys any possibility of creating a sense of community and caring in the school. I went through a system of rewards, and I did very well in some, and not well in others. I didn't win any gold letters or awards in sports. I did win a number of awards in academics. It didn't make me see my fellow students as competition or obstacles. Chris Weir, a principal in British Columbia, he's another one, said when his staff scrapped the awards at his previous elementary school a few years back, the only complaints came from parents of students with high marks. who are no longer, well,
parents who appreciate students being recognized. He goes on to say, if every child has a strength, why are we only honoring academics and athletics? Mr. Weir asked. We want to create a culture where every child has the opportunity to bring out their best. Well, yes, of course, we want every child to bring out their best. But we also want to recognize the best when it comes out. But not according to this insane vision of egalitarianism, which means actually nobody gets recognized. And the idea that every child can excel, frankly, isn't true. Not everybody is good at certain things. Sorry, much as that may violate political correctees, but it's the truth. Not everybody can succeed. Not everybody's going to be a winner. And that might be a very useful lesson for life. It doesn't mean you're a worthless piece of dog doo-doo because you didn't win an award. But we can't all win awards in life. We're not all going to be president of a company. We may be the janitor for our whole life, but that doesn't mean we're a bad person. There's dignity and value in being a janitor too. The abolition of rewards, far from protecting children, actually misleads them about the reality of life. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me here on LightResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. Show's repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All those are Eastern Standard Time. I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of Radio Canada.